You're listening to The Takeaway. I'm Duarte Geraldino, Deputy Managing Business Editor for Al Jazeera Digital. I'm in for Tanzina Vega.
And I've spoken actually with my son. He says, how bad is this? It's bad. It's bad. But we're going to be hopefully a best case, not a worst case. And that's what we're working for.
The White House issued new nationwide guidelines to help slow the spread of COVID-19 in the U.S. They're advising us to avoid gathering in groups of more than 10 people. The administration also wants us to limit eating and drinking in bars, restaurants, and other public places. And President Trump is also encouraging parents, keep your children home from school.
If everyone makes this change or these critical changes and sacrifices now, we will rally together as one nation and we will defeat the virus and we're going to have a big celebration all together.
The president also, for the first time, acknowledged the possibility that the pandemic could lead to a recession. He also said we could still be dealing with COVID-19 for months.
People are talking about July, August, something like that.
So far, more than 4,500 people in the U.S. have confirmed infections. But because of limited testing, experts agree the real number may be much higher. There's still a lot of confusion surrounding this unprecedented outbreak. And here to help answer some of your questions are two people who have been closely following this pandemic. Helen Branswell is the senior writer for infectious diseases for Stat News. Helen, thanks for coming on the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Bill Hanage is an associate professor of epidemiology at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. Bill, so glad to be here with you.
Hi, Duarte. Thanks for having me.
There's so much confusion over COVID-19, and we got this call from California.
This is Dee Dee from San Francisco. Is COVID-19 and coronavirus the same thing, or is there a difference between the two? They seem to be used interchangeably.
So, Bill?
So, there is a little bit of sort of semantics here. COVID-19 is a disease. Coronavirus is the family of viruses to which it belongs. You can think of it, and, you know, don't hate me for saying this, but it's kind of like coronaviruses and New England Patriots, and the specific virus that causes this is Tom Brady. And then COVID-19 would be the touchdowns that he throws.
All righty, guys, here's another one.
Hi, this is Andrea calling from Minneapolis, Minnesota. My question is what we know about how long the virus can live on different surfaces. I work in a school, and I'm wondering if we're not going to be there for 2 weeks, is it necessary to still disinfect everything?
You know, I think some of that information is still coming into view. It seems to be fairly hardy on surfaces, but, you know, one thing to keep in mind is that just because something can live on a surface if you test it in a lab doesn't necessarily mean that that's the way you're going to contract it. This is a disease that attacks the respiratory tract, and mostly people probably get it from encountering respiratory droplets that are coughed or sneezed out of the people who are infected. Those things can land on surfaces and can probably exist there for a while, sometimes days.
Wait a minute, you said days? So if someone who is infected, say for example, is having a cocktail at a bar and you go there, you could become infected if you touch that surface at a bar?
I think it's all about the reduction of risk. If you look at WHO and what they found out during the mission to Wuhan, the great majority of transmission occurs by the droplet route. Droplets are, you know, the little kind of bubbles of fluid that come out when we cough, to an extent when we talk, but they don't go very far and they like drop about 6 feet away. You've got to distinguish between a theoretical possibility and an actually significant contributor to the epidemiology. So I think that what the folks listening to this at home should think about is that, you know, it's all about reducing your risk. You know, I've had questions about, well, we've got long supply chains. What if I order something from Amazon, how do I know it's not been handled by somebody with COVID-19? And the answer is, well, you don't. But the chances of you being infected by something which came from there are so much lower than they would be than, say, if you went to a big crowded bar for a St. Patrick's Day celebration, for instance.
We had a few people ask how this compares to outbreaks that we've seen in the past. Here are two of our callers.
Hi, this is Sean in Oceanside. I want to know, how dangerous is coronavirus compared to other sicknesses like Ebola and the common cold?
Hi, my name's Lorraine in Davie. Coronavirus has been around for years and years. Is this strain of coronavirus more dangerous? What makes this strain something that we should all panic over? How is it different?
Helen, you've been covering the infectious disease beat for years now. What's the difference between this pandemic and some of the other outbreaks that we've had?
There are a number of coronaviruses that are circulating year in and year out, but they are not this one. This one is a new one, and it causes more severe disease at this time than the ones your caller was talking about. There are four human coronaviruses that cause effectively the common cold. This one is more severe, so that's why it's being taken much more seriously. How does this compare? Well, you know, Ebola is a very serious disease, but it only circulates in a belt in Africa, and although occasionally somebody with Ebola leaves Africa and goes to other places, Ebola isn't a threat worldwide. This one clearly is moving around the world, and while the fatality rate is much lower than Ebola, it's something that effectively all of us are potentially in, you know, line to catch, and so we have to be careful.
The interesting thing about Ebola, like Helen was saying, is that Ebola is controllable, even though it causes extremely severe disease and has a very high mortality rate, because it's really easy to identify people who have Ebola, and they are only infectious at the point when they have symptoms. So that means that you can contain it. The difference between Ebola and the current pandemic is that this virus is, for a start, nobody's immune to it. There is no immunity, unlike the other coronaviruses that we see every year. That means that everybody who becomes exposed is likely to become infected. The second thing about it, which is not like Ebola, is that it's getting very clear that some transmission occurs around about the time that people realize they're infected. So in other words, people who are not yet showing signs of infection, people who had not yet realized they were infected, can transmit it. And that makes it much, much, much harder to put a lid on.
Helen, there's been so much controversy over the state of testing for COVID-19 here in the U.S. A few of our callers asked about that.
Hi, my name is Jody. I'm calling from Alexandria, Virginia. I would like to know how we take care of ourselves if we have the symptoms, but we haven't been eligible for testing.
Hi, I'm Marilyn. I'm calling from Eugene, Oregon. And I wanted to know how soon after you've been exposed can you get an accurate test, presuming that there is testing available, which we are very short on in this country.
The statistics say that effectively 80% of people who get this will only have really mild influenza-like symptoms, in which case they should just stay home. The people who go on to have more severe disease will know it because they're going to start to have trouble breathing, and that's when they need to contact their medical options and arrange to go in to be tested, and they would be tested at that point. For the majority of us, there aren't tests right now, and the majority of us don't need to be tested right now. What you need to be doing is paying attention to your health and make sure that if you're not feeling well, don't be out and about. In fact, we should all be sort of reducing the number of contacts we have with other people at this point.
So on the notion of testing, Bill, and I'd like you to chime in on this. We do know that there may have been quite a few people who have gotten the virus, recovered. If they were tested, would we know that they ever had the virus? Is there any residual antibodies in your body left that says, okay, you once had coronavirus, COVID-19?
It depends on the test you're doing. The kind of test that we've been talking about so far is a test to see whether you're infected, and it works by detecting the presence of the virus's genetic material. You can do another test, which is the kind that you're talking about, which is able to detect whether or not somebody has been exposed. Those tests are going to be incredibly informative, but they're coming online, and I haven't seen any large quantity of data from them. There was one that was used in Singapore in order to link two contact two unknown transmission chains. They were found to be linked together by a guy who'd been infected in a church and had never been aware that he was infected, but he had led to two completely distinct transmission chains. So these are really important tests, these serological tests, but they're not online in large numbers at the moment. I want to echo what Helen was saying, because tests are scarce. And where you want to be using the tests right now is for people who are in hospital who doctors want to be able to tell whether or not they are infected with COVID. Because if somebody is infected, then they have to take very different precautions in order to protect other patients and themselves. So essentially, if you're well enough to be walking around and thinking that you should get tested, you shouldn't get tested. You should stay at home and drink fluids and, you know, tell your friends to be wary and perhaps isolate themselves as well.
So on that note, you know, if you're well enough to get tested, then you're saying you shouldn't get tested if you can essentially recover on your own. You know, there is sort of a public health issue with that. Some people want confirmation of infection in order for you to get services. If you don't actually take the test, do you think there'll be a situation where some of the benefits may not flow?
You know, I'm not really sure at this point. Some of this stuff is so new that how it's going to work will be seen over time. The last thing the system needs right now is the worried well flocking to healthcare providers to be tested for something that they probably don't have. I mean, if you're not really ill, you don't want to be in a situation right now where you're potentially encountering people who are really ill. You know, if you need health care, you should get it. If you're just worried, you should monitor your health and stay home. You know, this is not the time to go to an emergency room unless you need to be in an emergency room.
Bill, members of our community also want a little bit more clarity about how COVID-19 is actually transmitted. Listen to this call.
Hi, my name is Julie. I'm from Omaha. Is this airborne or not? I've heard both, I've seen both, and I'm just not sure which to believe.
Bill?
So there are different routes of transmission. As I said previously, the majority of this is droplet and fomite. The airborne route, which I think your caller is referring to, is what we would usually call an aerosol. And those are, you know, that's much more sort of scary, because it's the sort of thing where somebody can be infected while walking down a corridor that somebody was infected with walked down previously. That's the way that measles is so explosively transmissible. We do not think that this is a major route of transmission in most cases. The exception is that aerosols may be produced by some medical procedures, like intubation, and that's one of the reasons why we need to be so careful that the patients who are being treated in hospitals are identified quickly and treated with appropriate care.
Bill Hannage is an associate professor of epidemiology at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. Helen Branswell is senior writer for infectious diseases for Stat News. Thank you both for answering our listener questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be answering more of your questions in the coming days and weeks. Leave us a voicemail at 1-877-869-8253. We'll try to answer them on the show, and you can find all of our coverage of COVID-19 at thetakeaway.org/coronavirus.
Support for The Takeaway is from LegalZoom. It's important to set up your business the right way. LegalZoom's network of independent attorneys can answer questions and provide legal advice. To learn more, go to LegalZoom.com.
A lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.